Occupying Wall Street, because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
I am occupying Wall Street because of the economy. I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
I'm here because I care deeply about what's happening to the country. I'm 70 years old, and my entire life savings, my retirement, my IRA was literally embezzled by Wall Street brokers.
The people are getting nothing. People are losing their homes. People are losing their life savings. That ain't right, man.
We let these giant corporate banking behemoths rob the American people.
I want to see a system that works for everyone.
It's time for us as citizenry to stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
I want to inform people that capitalism doesn't have to be the way.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
So you have to ask yourself the question, what matters?
The weakest of all political demands is give me something to vote for. On September 17, 2011, we made the power of the people visible to the entire world. Overcoming division, we found common ground at Liberty Square. We're here, and we ain't going nowhere.
And welcome to Occupy Wall Street Radio. My name is Tony Bates. I am program director at WBAI. I am joined in studio with your hosts.
My name is Faith Logier, and I occupy Wall Street.
My name is Prudence Cates, and I occupy Wall Street.
My name is Zuni Tika, and I occupy Wall Street.
My name is Sade Adona, and I occupy Wall Street.
Well, it was an exciting night for all of us last night at Occupy Wall Street, New York, as many of you have heard around the country. The site was raided, and police were absolutely brutal in some cases. Much of what we saw as, or many of the occupiers saw as their homes, were simply ripped up and thrown into trash compactors and this, that, and the other. We all watched very sadly as this stuff took place. That gave us cause to have legal action take place today. And we had some attorneys from both wait a minute. First of all, I want to say on this show, bear with us because we've all been up for over 24 hours, or most of us have. I did sneak in a couple of hours of sleep, so bear with us. But what happened earlier today was attorneys went to bat for Occupy Wall Street to see if they could return occupiers to the park. Last night, the park was cleaned out in a literal way. As I left, I was on the air for, I don't know, maybe 5 hours, reporting what I was seeing from the site. As I left, men were literally scrubbing the park with brushes, with all kinds of implements. And I also saw police in huge, huge numbers, frightening numbers. I saw them. I was at a point in the street where there was a crowd amassing in protest of what actions the police were taking. And they were, at some point, broken through and pushed back by the police, and that was uncomfortable to watch in itself. What were your experiences like last night?
Well, for me, and this is Faith speaking, I happened to not be at the park last night because I went out with a group of individuals because a friend of mine was supposed to leave to L.A. Today, actually. And we went out, and all of a sudden I got all these texts and phone calls that the occupation was being raided, and there were policemen dressed in riot gear, and we got back, and by the time we got back, they had the park shut down, I would say a two-block radius, just barricaded, and I tried to get in from different ends, and they were like, what are you doing down there? And there were a number of physical confrontations with the police, and I want to say that this was with the police, with people that were standing on a public sidewalk. A male officer hit a woman, and that like occurred right next to me. My knuckles are actually has a cut going through it, the other is like swollen because this cop was like just shoving his shield. I mean, actually not even shoving, like, yeah, with all his force. I mean, it was just, like, insane. They were hurting women. They were using excessive force. And actually, I'd also like to say, when I got there, There were a number of individuals being led away because they had been victims of pepper spray. And there was just excessive force, and it's as usual, as it's been with the police force. What were your experiences like?
I actually wasn't there either. I got a thousand text messages as things were happening. But were you there?
Yeah, this is Zuni. I was actually there. I was going for a walk at the time, and I was coming back walking down Wall Street, and all of a sudden I saw an alarming amount of police officers in riot gear, and someone came and told me very quickly that we're being raided. So I immediately started running down to the end of the park where I live, the lower end. So when I arrived, there were police officers handing out these pieces of paper telling us that we had to leave immediately to grab our belongings and leave. So when I understood this, I went back to our camp. I had quite a big camp. We established a camp. We've been there since day one. And I was trying to pull things out that could be useful later to reestablish a camp, like tents, sleeping bags, rain ponchos. I knew it was going to rain, umbrellas, things like this to keep people warm and dry, because I figured we would reestablish somewhere else. So I was coming in and out a couple times, taking things to friends, you know, stashing things. And I came back in the third time, or I tried to, I attempted to, when they told me I couldn't go back in. And they started pushing us across the street towards Burger King. I tried repeatedly to get back in. They wouldn't let me back in. Then they felt like Burger King wasn't quite far enough. So they started pushing us down Church Street, like towards the park. And then they actually Then they push us back towards the bar on the, I forget the name of it. Sorry. And they were holding us there. People were like trying to run out, dragging their tents. We heard loud noises coming from the cops, like they were thudding things, hitting people. We saw things flying left and right. And we were very concerned for our friends. We didn't know what was going on. Suddenly, one of my friends came out who was in the camp next to me, informing us that they were using sound weapon technology.
Oh, yeah.
Were you guys aware of that?
There were reports of that. And for the moment, though, we're going to come back to this part of the story. We have our guest on the line. We're going to talk about the legal actions that took place today. After we were removed from the park, that caused the need or brought along the need for legal action, and today the Center for Constitutional Rights and the National Lawyers Guild made an attempt to get the judge to let occupiers back into the park. In fact, they were going against the previous injunction. The police disobeyed an injunction by another judge by even entering the park. They had broken the law. We're going to hear now from Michael Ratner, who is with the Center for Constitutional Rights. Michael, you're on the air with Occupy Wall Street Radio. What happened in court today?
Great to talk to you, Tony. Well, last night, in particular, a group of attorneys that work within Occupied Wall Street, the Occupied Wall Street legal team, the National Lawyers Guild in particular, got notice that the park was going, it was in the process of being raided. We didn't get any notice. But the legal teams had been working already for a month on the issues, and were ready to go into court. And as the raid was going on, they prepared the legal papers, went into court, got an emergency judge at 6 a.m. The emergency judge entered an incredibly good order for the Occupied Wall Street people. It's called a temporary injunction, and the word temporary is important here. And she entered an injunction that said no one could be evicted from the park, but of course that was already gone, and that the protesters could be allowed back into the park with tents. And that was entered at 6 a.m. in the morning. So at 6 a.m. we're sitting with a court order that says protesters allowed back into the park with their tents. At that point, there's a court order. They can go back into the park. At that point, the main lawyers on the case went down to serve those papers on the city corporation council and on the police who were in the park. They served those papers, gave those papers to them by 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. I went over to 6th Avenue and Canal, where there was a group of people who'd left the park, 400 or 500 people, and I told him about the decision, and a number of the people made the decision to go back into the park because it was legal for them to do it according to the judge, which is the law at that point. We marched back down, we get to the park, and the park is completely surrounded by the Darth Vader cops in their riot gear with the helmets. Hundreds, hundreds, hundreds of cops not only followed us down, but were all over the street and prohibited anybody from going into the park. Now this is, Tony, this is despite the fact that we had in our hands, and the lawyers for Occupy Wall Street, all of us, had in our hands the injunction saying people had to be allowed in the park. So at that point, what you have, and you think about it, you have a court order saying admit the people to the park with tents, with whatever, and they won't even admit the people into the park under any circumstances.
That means that our local dictator, also known as Mayor Bloomberg, has made a decision.
And that's really incredible to me, because our system supposedly is based on the fact that no one is above the law. But here you have Mayor Bloomberg saying, I'm above the law. Despite a court order, I am not going to let these people into the park. Here you have the police department, whoever's orders they're taking from, we are not going to let these people in the park despite a court order.
And it's also interesting that Brookfield, they pled innocent, that they didn't know what was going on. But then when they learned what happened, they still wouldn't let people back in. And let's remind our listeners that Bloomberg's current girlfriend is on the board of Brookfield.
It's amazing, because it actually, you know, if one of us had violated a court order, we'd be hauled in front of a judge in like 2 seconds. We'd be held and either given a fine and jail sentence or a jail sentence. And, you know, it would be very quick, and it's an outrage. And so now we'll have to see what happens, because even though we'll get to the second phase of the legal thing in a second, we have a clear violation of a court order. And that should be the highest authority in the land at that point. An individual, whether he's the mayor, a cop, or you and I, can't violate a court order without being held in contempt of court. There isn't a lot of defense to it. Even if the order is later held invalid, the order is good at the moment it's issued, and you're held in contempt if you violate that order. So that's where we are on the contempt. I say that's where we are. We have that order in front of us. The order was good until we went back into court. And I say we, this is primarily the National Lawyers Guild, that went back into court. And we had a different judge was assigned, not the judge that gave us the original court order. I won't go into the technical reasons for that, but there was a different judge assigned. There was an argument, you know, for a good part of the afternoon.
So, Michael, can I interrupt you for one moment there to get some clarification? A judge had ruled in favor of the occupiers. When you went back into court, that judge had been removed?
Well, okay, first of all, the judge ruled in favor of the occupiers at, you know, 6 a.m., without the other side being there. So it's called a temporary order.
Okay.
So that judge was, no matter what, going to have a, and she had even set another hearing for 11:30 today, because that is a temporary order. The other side isn't there. She says there's irreparable injury, which means injury that can't be remedied unless I give this order. And therefore, the judge gave that order because she felt it was such a crucial First Amendment constitutionally protected right to do it. So she had actually set the next hearing because her first order was temporary without having the other side there. When she gave the order, she's what's called she was an emergency judge, essentially. And therefore, you know, an emergency judge, and this is really a rough way of saying it, can sometimes stay with the case right through, but oftentimes it will just be that she was there for the emergency purpose in the early morning before the court opened. And after that, it'll go into a process in the court where another judge is picked for it. So while she could have stayed on, and we don't know how she got changed, there is at least, you know, an arguable legal basis for them asking it to be treated in a different way. They obviously didn't like her ruling, and so they were happy to get it out of her hands. But there is a legal way, because it was an emergency basis order, to put it into a regular court.
What happens in the next step?
Right. The next step is they're in front of the regular court, and then both sides are there, and there's a argument ensues before the new judge. It takes a fair amount of time, a lot about, you know, the First Amendment, the city claiming, of course, that they have these rules, even though everybody acknowledges first that the rules were only put in after the people occupied the park. But, of course, the city's arguing that, you know, those rules are reasonable rules, that you can restrict the First Amendment in what are called time, place, and manner restrictions. and that the people have a right to come into the park during the day and say what they, you know, what they want, but they don't have a right to sleep there. It's against the basically the new rules. And so that court, that goes on. The judge takes a little time off, and then he writes a, you know, a short 3 or 4 page decision in which he basically says, the temporary restraining order is no longer, that he, vacates the temporary restraining order, and he puts, and therefore, the order that, let's put this in regular language, the order that we had to get people into the park with tents was vacated, and he gave an order saying that, that basically, that they could go, people could go back into the park, but that they couldn't use, but they basically denied our right to continue the temporary restraining order and allowed the rules that the city has in place to be, and the city in Brookfield have in place to continue. And so basically we lost in front of the second judge. It's a little hard to understand, but the first order was temporary. We got an order. The second order, the judge said he gets rid of the first order, and the city's rules are back in place.
And so that's the order that we'll actually have to follow. This is the one that the police won't go against, I presume. I would ask you, when is the next date in court? When do you go back into court?
Well, that's unclear. The judge has a schedule for briefing in the next, you know, 30 days or so. There's also the possibility of an appeal. There's been no decision by the lawyers to how good the chances are, and there's certainly been no decision by the people at in the General Assembly at Occupied Wall Street about whether they want to. Our basic advice on these kind of cases, and this I want to say very strongly, when we were discussing bringing this case into court before when we heard that, when we had the notice that they were going to actually come into the court, into the park and get rid of us when I saw you down there a month ago, Tony,
mm-hmm.
We said we don't think it should go into the court. We think the best way to stop the police from coming in was get masses of people down there, and as you recall, we had 5,000 people, the UAW and all kinds of other things, tons of television cameras, media, and therefore the police were afraid to go in. This time they did it like thieves in the night when we didn't have the media, we didn't have the 5,000 people, mm-hmm. And my view has always been this is a movement in the streets. You go to the court as the last resort, and I would still say that to the listeners, to Occupied Wall Street, this is a movement in the streets. And yes, we'll defend everybody when they get arrested, we'll defend everybody when they get dragged into courts, we'll continue to try, but in the end, the message is very clear, and actually what's interesting in the court decision and what's shocking about it, the judge actually recognized in an incredible sentence that the people in the park have, by their unorthodox methods of occupying the park, made a national, worldwide message of the disparities in this country between the wealthy and the powerful and the rest of the people of the country. And despite that finding that the method of occupation was critical to getting that message out, the judge denied that it was protected by the Constitution and the First Amendment. So it's an outrageously bad decision, but it's an interesting decision that shows that the method of occupation at the heart of the financial, really, empire in this country got across through an occupation that the judge called unorthodox.
All right, Michael Ratner, thank you so much for being with us this evening. Michael Ratner, again, is president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. We are going to go back, take a little bit more time, and go back to the discussion about some of our experiences last night. And we await, obviously, those decisions. Sade, you were there last night. I could see you from the other side of the barricade where the police had moved me.
Yeah, it was horrific, and it was kind of eerie because you felt something even the night before. We were seeing like probably 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, cops walking around, looking at things, pointing at things. There were police officers who were sitting in their cars outside, like writing notes and doing things. So we had this suspicion that perhaps very soon they're going to raid. I thought it was going to be the night prior. After I left the radio station yesterday, I went to go meet up with my two little sisters at the park, and we just all powwowed, and we were just, you know, talking about what happened during our day. And somebody came up to us and said, there's something going on. And I mean, this is probably about like 10 o'clock. I left to go take a shower. I came back. I see SWAT teams. I see raid gear. I see helicopters and lights and my friends running around. I see people being pulled out of their tents. I see people, I see police officers smashing their tents. I see my friends screaming. I see chaos. I see people just running around, not knowing where to go. I see cops pushing people back and barricades. I'm looking horrified, and I'm thinking, like, these are my friends. These are, this is a community that I have been in for 2 months of people who have been enriching themselves, enriching their lives, and taking into themselves the way to fix the problems that is deemed on us by our society. And I'm breaking down. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm now behind a barricade, and my things I'm watching are being shoved and thrown into a truck with garbage being thrown on top of them. And they're telling us that we're unsanitary, but yet you're going into this place, and you're stepping on tents, and you're kicking people. My little sisters tied themselves to a tree. Some of my friends had locked themselves down in a kitchen. Some had tried to jump over the barricades to get back in the park. Some of my friends have been pepper sprayed. A lot of my friends are in jail right now, and we're trying to get them out. And it's just like, just knowing that, like, we're here because we have this vision, we have this dream, and we believe in something. And they're here because they know that we're onto something, and they're trying to take that away from us. And they know that us being here is letting the world, is opening a door for awareness for the rest of the world. And they know this voice and this whole entire movement is very powerful, and it's very strong, and it's hitting home everywhere you go. And the more and more we spread, the more and more we hold up that space, the more and more we stay in Zuccotti Park, and the longer we're there, they know that this will affect the world, and this will deem, like, what the change will be. I've already said that I'm in it for the long haul, and I want to see my future children's my in the history books and the things that I want my children to read about what this was, what we tried to do, and actually tell the truth instead of withholding books, information in history books.
Speaking of withholding information, I think as a testimony of how important what you're saying is, how important this movement is that Google Maps literally blocked. It was just black. You couldn't, if you Googled how to get to Zuccotti Park, for example, if you were in the Bronx or Queens, mm-hmm. like, oh, I don't know exactly how to get there, because New York is a big place, there's five boroughs, Google wouldn't show you how to get there. You could not cross the Brooklyn Bridge mm-hmm. if you want. They would not allow any traffic over the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
All of the subways were blocked downtown.
Yep.
It was a huge concerted effort, which shows inversely how important
right.
what you guys are doing.
They're literally
what
trying.
What we are doing.
They're trying to halt a voice, halt a message. Why else would they go this far to spend this much money, to hire these mini cops, to hire, like all this gear? They'll shut down schools. 30 schools in the Bay Area shut down, but they spend millions of dollars on riot gear. Like, you think about it, like, the logistics.
Well, that's because J.P. Morgan gave them a big donation. Let's not forget that, $4.9
million.
$4.6 million, excuse me.
They're taking the money that we're making. They're telling us that we need to work harder. They're telling us that we need to vote for a leader that is gonna like, you know, benefit for us. Yet we know that the leaders are pawns for this game. So are the police. I had a face-to-face with the police behind a barricade, and I was just urged to just move the barricade. I just wanted to lift it up and move it. Because, like, this is the space. This is you and me. And I'm in the police officer's face, like, you are human. But I couldn't even see the human no more. What I saw was the robot. What I saw was a clone. What I saw was a product of institutionalization of, I gotta make this money. This is the only way I'm gonna do this. This is the only way I'm gonna be able to do this. But I don't wanna do this to you. But I'm gonna do it to you anyway. So if you get any closer, if you touch that barricade, if you jump over that barricade, if anybody pushes you, if you get in my face just a little bit, if you blink, I'm gonna take this nightstick out and I'm gonna beat you. And that's what we were facing. That's what I was looking down the eyes of, like, and I lost the human and the person, and I saw the robot, and that's what was driving me just absolutely insane yesterday. I was just like, I cannot believe we live in a society like this, where, like, and it's in other parts of the world, it's worse, and I haven't been to other parts of the world.
And thank you very much, Sade. I want to remind everyone listening that we are still in a fundraiser for the Pacifica Radio Archives. If you want to call and pledge up in support of this program, but certainly in support of the archives, please call us at 800-735-0230 Once again, that number is 800-735-0230. We need to raise $5,000 in this hour, folks. So we're not asking you, we're not offering you any premiums during this hour. Certainly, if you've heard something today that you would like to pledge for, you can do that. But we want you to call up and pledge for programming that you hear on the Pacifica Network that you can't hear anywhere else. This is Occupy Wall Street Radio. This show airs on WBAI from 6:30 to 7 p.m. from Monday through Friday. But make sure you make that phone call in support of this network, in support of the fine work that those folks at Pacifica Radio Archives do. I worked with them for 5 years. I assure you, it is quite an operation and well worth the investment. One more time, 800-735-0230 to make a pledge of support. If you can pledge at the $5,000 level, please do that. If you can pledge at the $1,000 level, please do that. If you can pledge at the $100 level, do that. But pledge because of the nature of the programming, not because we're offering you something, and the work that the Pacifica Radio Archives has done for all of these years. Remember, the Pacifica Network understood that it was important to record voices like these very voices you're hearing now, people who were involved in movements in the early days of this kind of civil rights movement. We have exclusive recordings in that vault that are just amazing that you can't hear anywhere else. I remember I was telling some of the hosts here with me a couple of years ago, we discovered a recording of Paul Robeson that we didn't know existed, that his family didn't know existed. And we were able to restore that tape, drive it across country, and present that to that family. That's what your pledges of support are going for, folks. 800-735-0230. We're going to hear from some other folks who were in the park. We have some folks who were recorded earlier in the day, and we're going to hear their experiences. We're going to start out with, I believe it's a media member, was it? From actually a media member from Occupy Wall Street. I'm not sure which clip is first, but we will go to track number two.
So
where were you this evening?
So I'm not even sure what time it was. I was over in the library, and we were all sort of wrapping up for the night. People were starting to go to sleep, and we just saw riot gear police start lining up around the park, and all these trucks came in and turned on these giant spotlights over the park. And so we immediately started getting all the people out who for sure couldn't get arrested, people who we knew aren't American citizens and they might risk deportation. So we got them out first. Then people with belongings that they held valuable, we got them out. And we slowly got pushed by the cops, not physically yet. They were sort of just with their shields pushing us. And until we were all sort of around the kitchen in the center of the park. So we all locked arms and sat down. It was three rows deep of people sitting, locked arms, and the people in front of me were locked onto my legs as well, so it was a really tight-knit bundle of people. We all had masks, we had earplugs, because they were playing like a high-frequency recording or something. And people had goggles on and everything. We were just chanting, we were singing We Shall Overcome. It was a really awesome moment. Everyone was like turning to the person next to them, being like, I love you, I love you. Like, it was a really awesome moment. The cops were just looking past us, trying to avoid eye contact. I saw one cop who was actually crying. Because there were some cops there who didn't want to be there, and they were just sort of doing what they were told.
How many people were in the park at the time?
100, 150 all around the kitchen. There were people with drums, there were people singing, there were people chanting. People were trying to introduce themselves to the cops to sort of say, we're humans. A lot of the cops just kept looking straight ahead. And I got up because I saw some other occupiers walking around, and I got up to sort of check to see if anyone else I knew was around. And as soon as I stood up, a cop grabbed my arm and walked me towards the exit, and he was swearing at me. He was saying, get the f*** out of the park. You guys have been here long enough. Get the f*** out. At the top of his lungs, he was like screaming at me. Meanwhile, all around us, they're just tearing down what we've built over the past 58 days. I know all of my belongings are probably somewhere never to be found again. And then he handed me off to three other officers, who then handed me off to four other officers, and I slowly got escorted like two blocks away from the park.
First of all, can you say your name?
My name is Nicholas Furchette.
And you were on the march that left last night. Daniel said here that you were pepper spray. Is that right?
That's right. I was hit in the face with pepper spray along with some of my comrades. Only a block from our home. We were really just standing on the corner, wondering what to do, and just completely random splash of pepper spray all over everybody.
And was that the corner of Broadway and Cortland?
Yes, yeah, it was.
Okay, yeah, and that was a particularly violent corner.
Yeah, at the moment it was maybe like 2 o'clock in the morning. On both sides of the corner were riot police with shields. I even saw a petite black woman hit in the face with a riot shield. And then we were all, like, hit with pepper spray. I mean, not too many of us, but I got a little in my eyes.
And you've been here for the rest of the night since?
Yeah, I didn't go to sleep. In fact, I was with the march that we got up basically, like, into Soho. Yeah, actually, we got pretty close to Washington Square Park. Like, we passed over Canal, over Houston, and got...
We're about up at Great Jones Way.
Yeah, Great Jones, right. And then it got broken into like 4 different chunks, and I stuck with a chunk, and it was really tough to try to help keep everybody calm, together, you know, and we were just getting harassed from both sides, and they looped us around the block a few times, but eventually, you know, someone had a guitar, we started singing and just like taking a real nice slow walk. And just eventually, they just let us go. So we marched back to Foley Square, where I helped facilitate the General Assembly there, the emergency GA.
And how would you describe the police behavior last night?
Well, I mean, it's not unusual for NYPD. I mean, it's typical police behavior here. I guess it could have been worse. You know, we've seen worse in Oakland and such. No rubber bullets, no sandbag shotguns and such. But you know, riot police. I mean, there was a ton of cops there with the riot shields, batons all over the place. I was surprised they weren't more violent, actually.
Pretty much, police came in, about 300 police came in about 12 o'clock in the morning, and they pretty much rousted us up, took all our stuff, and had it disposed of with the Department of Sanitation. There were a couple of arrests made last night, and there was really an irrational movement of us out of Ducati Park last night. They did not give us a chance to get our stuff together. They did not give us a chance to work and facilitate to get stuff out, moved out in an orderly fashion. It just came in, strong-armed us, got our stuff out, and here you have it today. We can't even go back in the park.
How long had you been there?
Excuse me?
How long have you been in the park?
I've been here since day one, but I've been on and off because I've been, you know, I live in the Bronx, so I come here when I get days off, or if I get a time off or anything like that, I'll come down here and I'll stay down here for days at a time.
Okay, so I'm here with Peter. Peter Harris, he just got out of jail, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what happened last night.
Well, last night after the big raid on the camp, all the tents and personal items were destroyed. There was kind of a standoff on the corner of Broadway and Pine.
And what is your relation with Wall Street or the occupation?
Sure. I'm a freelance photojournalist. Fortunately, I don't have NYC press credentials, so it kind of takes away some of my legitimacy. But I was down on the corner of Pine and Broadway, where there was basically a standoff between the protesters and police. The police reinforced themselves, made an announcement that if we didn't clear off to the sidewalk or leave the area, then anyone in the street would be arrested. Then they did a wedge formation, a V formation into the crowd, splitting it up. And I, unfortunately, was one of the first ones arrested because I couldn't get onto the sidewalk fast enough. And in that moment, part of the crowd was pulling me back into the crowd, and at least 3, 4, 5 police officers were grabbing me, pulling me down onto the ground. At that point, my concern was just protecting my camera gear, and I just cuddled it like in a fetus position and just got thrown to the ground and handcuffed, and then spent the next 12 hours or 14 hours or so in lockup.
Do you know what happened to your equipment?
To who?
Do you know what happened to your equipment?
My equipment seems to be fine. I haven't really tested it to find out if it's been banged up a lot or not. So at the moment, it seems okay.
Okay, we're back, and we're about to talk live with Joe Diamond. He has been with the Occupy Wall Street media team from the very beginning, and he is currently at Zuccotti Park, and he's going to tell us what he sees there. Joe, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so Joe, can you tell us what it's like down there?
Well, it's really festive. Everybody is in really high spirits. Everybody is really glad to be here. It's a lot of fresh faces. It's definitely a sense of gravity. Everybody is talking about what happened last night and this morning. But at the same time, we not just in this park, but we're all together. In so many new faces, so many new people. In addition to everybody who was here, which is, of course, really exciting.
Joe, I think what we need to add to this conversation is that at some point around 5 p.m. this afternoon or this evening, police officers began to allow occupiers back into the park. So Liberty Square is reoccupied. In fact, there was a call from Occupy Wall Street for all of the folks who had been there to come back down to the park. The difference is that they were letting people in two by two, but they are not allowing people to take in tents or sleeping bags or equipments or even large backpacks, I believe that you were saying, Prudence.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like now in the park?
Right. From what I got from the court before, what the lawyer said, was that they need some time to go over what the judge's documents. But they said that we are allowed to be here 24 hours. The lawyer for Brookfield also said that everybody can be here 24 hours.
And Joe, sorry, just to clarify, you were at the court earlier?
Right.
Okay.
And afterwards, the lawyers kind of explained to us they need a couple days to go over the documents. And currently we have it's a little up in the air as to exactly if we're allowed sleeping bags or not. We're getting kind of mixed messages about that. But it's pretty well established that as of right now, they're not allowing tents in the park. Well, of course, when we put tents up initially, we weren't, allowed to have tents up.
How many people are there in the park now that they've allowed folks to return?
The entire half north of the park, the entire east half of the park, is just shoulder to shoulder because of the GA happening. It's just packed. This is probably, I haven't seen as many people here since, a really busy Saturday.
I was in the square earlier, and I noted that there were lots of faces that I did not recognize. Also noted that people had taken to pinning on themselves a little card, just a piece of paper with 99% written on it. Is that still the case?
Didn't quite hear what you just said.
Well, when I was down at the park earlier, a lot of the faces I saw I didn't recognize. It seemed to me that New Yorkers were coming out to support, despite the fact that they didn't have that opportunity last night because the police came in the middle of the night. Are there still fresh faces there?
Yes, there's definitely lots and lots of fresh faces here. I've been talking, walking around interviewing people with live stream, and a lot of people here are here for the first time. People have been here once or twice, three times, and people have been saying that after what's happened last night and this morning, they're pissed off, fed up. This is where they feel like they need to be.
Do you think that
they've come holding signs? It's very exciting.
Do you think that people will spend the night in the park tonight, that the park will be occupied without tents, without blankets, without if sleeping bags aren't allowed? What is your take?
Yes, I do think that this will be definitely. We'll definitely have a lot of people here overnight.
And what are people discussing at the GA right now?
When I first walked, when I walked away, the GA had just begun. I was streaming it. They had just called for a moment of silence, 15 seconds to, in honor of everything that had happened last night and this morning. And then we kind of broke out for 10 minutes, and everybody just kind of got a chance to talk to people around them about, what they experienced. And then the next thing, which was in the middle of when I stepped out, was the library was talking, the library working group. They are building up their library again. They have 4 books at the moment, and it's growing.
It was really sad to see last night as people's property was destroyed. And I was struck by, I don't know if the rest of you were able to see this from your vantage points, the glee on the faces, especially of the sanitation workers who were bringing garbage cans full of garbage to pour onto the belongings of the occupiers. Joe, thank you very much for reporting from Zuccotti Square this evening with us. This is WBAI. I'm Tony Bates. This is Occupy Wall Street Radio. I'm in the studio with your hosts,
Faith Legier,
Prudence Cates,
Zuni Tika,
Sade Adona.
And we are doing a special Occupy Wall Street this evening. That's a part of the special is that we are raising money for the Pacifica Radio Archives. So we're asking that you take a moment to donate, to take out that PIN, take out your American Express, your MasterCard, or your Visa, and call up and send money to support the Pacifica Radio Archives, who store all of this information, have been since the 50s storing information for this network. You can do that by dialing 800-735-0230. We need to raise $5,000 in this hour alone. That means we need your phone calls. Support Occupy Wall Street Radio and support Pacifica Radio Archives by calling up. Make a pledge at the $25 level if that's what you can do. Make a pledge at the $50 level if that's what you can do. Make a pledge at the $100 level if you're able to, but there are some of you out there who can make a pledge at the $5,000 level or the $1,000 level or the $500 level. I would encourage you to do that. Take a moment. It takes about 3 minutes of your time. 800-735-0230. That's the number for you to call. This is Occupy Wall Street Radio, and we're going to go to our next guest, who I believe is, we are not going to go to our next guest. We're going to wait for our next guest to call in, and then we'll go to them. But now, I think that we ought to wonder, we ought to talk with each other about what happens next. Where does this movement go? Does this end Occupy Wall Street?
No. I do believe that we will find alternate places to occupy. There's already been talk about movement, but home in everybody's heads is Zuccotti Park, who's come out for this movement. And that's kind of where my mind is going. It's going straight back to Zuccotti Park. And I just keep thinking, take back the park, take back the park. And it's only, you know, like, maybe this will unite everyone. Like, we needed that bigger sense of unity within the place, because there was becoming division and divide because of, you know, can we say COINTELPRO? I guess I can say it. he didn't nod me off. But like there was that feeling of that in there. And I think this will bring us together, united. We do have a situation, an issue, and there's still the movement that we're trying to withhold and we're pushing for, and we truly believe in. Like, and so I think, like, even with me, my belongings, my last being crushed up in the back of a garbage truck with garbage on top of it. Like, I'm still thinking, I'll wear these clothes for the rest of the year if I have to. I'm going to be in that park. Like, I believe.
As Ellis Roberts, our guest host yesterday, said, the cops are our best organizers.
Mm-hmm.
And Zuni, you're one of the people that was there from the very first day of the occupation.
Yeah.
Will you stop occupying Wall Street now?
No, absolutely not.
What will go next for you?
Well, I'm not sure, but we were thinking that, like, if we have to get, like, down snowsuits, that we would just sleep in those on the ground, because I don't think those would be illegal.
Yeah, that probably would not be legal, but I'm sure that occupiers will find out. Faith, will you continue to occupy Wall Street?
I have been with the Occupy movement since day one, and I will be here till the world is a better place for all peoples, all nations, and this earth. I would like to draw attention to the fact that the Occupy movement is not just for, you know, us occupying. I mean, I can be living actually at my parents' home in comfort, and other people could be living in comfort, and we have left comfort because we are occupying to draw attention to the disparities that lie between the governments actions and the people's needs. We are trying to draw attention to the trials and tribulations and oppressions and suppressions that the people face, that I consider humanity enslaved. And I will, like, give every ounce of my being to serve as a vessel to awaken the people. I mean, we've got elections that are based in candidacies that are only backed by money, by finances. So from its beginning, it's in fraud. And look at this court proclamation this morning. The police broke a court injunction, and let's see how this judge handles it. What are they going to get for this infraction? The police, New York State. Will the judge do anything? I highly doubt it. I don't look for justice from a corrupt system. I don't expect it. You know what? If we would have looked to the government and waited and asked the government, could we occupy Zuccotti Park? We would still be waiting. The people need to realize that it's our duty to step up and say it is our right to create our future. It is our right to take this world and make our lives what it could be.
Faith, I have to jump in and say that on our first meeting about this radio program, the language that our hosts, co-hosts, Luke Richardson and Max Hodes came up with, and they used the language.
Luke Richardson, who might still be in jail right now, for all we know.
Right. They said, our bodies are our votes. In other words, your corrupt system, we're not going to participate in it anymore. We're going to go into that park and vote with our bodies. And I think that that is revolutionary language. We're going to go now to Craig Bethel, who is an occupier, who was here originally in New York with us occupying. He has gone to several other occupations, and you've seen, in to my mind, or in my estimation, this effort is concerted to stop this movement. As Oakland was attacked a couple of nights ago, New York, the head of the snake who inspired this movement, was attacked last night. Other occupations have been attacked, and it seems like this is done in concert. Craig has been to several of these occupations. Let's talk to him about this. 212, the number to call to pledge is 800-735-0230. Take 3 minutes. Make a pledge of support to Pacifica Radio Archives. Craig, welcome to Occupy Wall Street Radio.
Tony, how are you? It's been a while.
It's been a while. So you are out in Washington, as I understand it now. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm actually in the RV on the highway right now. We are in between Tacoma and Seattle.
You're occupying an RV? I thought you were occupying Washington. Which occupation are you headed to at this point? Are you going? You're headed to Seattle?
Yeah, well, actually, I've been watching the live stream, and Seattle's in the middle of something right now, so it looks like we're going to head that way for the evening.
I see. So are you looking via the live stream and then deciding which occupation to visit?
No. I mean, we have already a plan set out, but currently Seattle, from the report on live stream, they were marching in solidarity with Wall Street, and then the police decided to respond with some pepper spray. They pepper sprayed a blind woman, a clergy member, and also a member of the media team.
Wow.
So I was doing some repairs on the RV, and then we were changing the propane, and now we're going to head to Seattle to really lend our support any way possible. We started in Everett, Washington this morning, so we were actually coming from there.
And how many occupations have you come upon?
In Washington so far, we visited Tacoma, Seattle, and Everett. And after that, we plan to go to Olympia, Newport, and Port Orford. And after that, we're heading south towards San Diego. We're going to hit as many on the way to San Diego as we can.
I see you're going to the warm weather for this winter. I can't blame you. I'd like to occupy San Diego myself. What are the spirits like of the occupiers that you've come into contact to, and what's on their mind in terms of what needs to be changed most immediately by this government?
From what I've noticed thus far, it seems that everyone is really in the same mindset. No matter where I go, even the negatives. And just the way that the community works, as well as being hopeful. They're very receptive to our arrival. They're very interested in what's happening in other places. But when we really sit down and talk, it's many of the same things happening, even down to the interpersonal relationships in the camp. But also, you know, in Washington, there's a lot of major corporations that are really trying to make their stand and change this place. And the people are very upset about that. And it's funny, even though there may not be a lot of occupants in smaller towns, the towns know about them, and they are in support. Everett, for example, is a heavy militarized area. But I spend time, you know, just in the town, going from place to place, talking to mostly people in the military, and even though they can't physically express their individual support, they're very much in the support of the Occupy movement. And I haven't spoken to a person in Washington yet that wasn't in support. So it's been an amazing experience in this state so far.
Yeah, it's my estimation that a majority of the country really supports this movement. Craig Bethel, thank you for being with us on Occupy Wall Street Radio. My name is Tony Bates. I'm in the studio with your host, Shadi Adona. Azona. also with Faith Lauje. We are also here with Prudence Cates. I pronounced your name properly on the air.
Good job.
And we are also here with Zuni Tika, all of whom occupy Wall Street. The number for you to call to make a pledge of support, we're asking that you help us to raise $5,000 in support of Pacifica Radio Archives during this hour. The number to call is 800-735-0230. We're not offering you a premium. We're asking that you support this network, the Pacifica Radio Network, because of what it does, because of who we are. We have been on the forefront of movements like this one from our very inception. It's why we are here. It's why you're tuned in. You want an alternative. You want a media that does not tell you lies. You want a media that will bring you analysis that you don't hear in the rest of the media. You can see the way this movement is portrayed, the Occupy Wall Street in the mainstream. Once you visit one of the occupations, you notice that almost everything that they're saying is a lie, or that they focused on only the worst elements within the occupation, that indeed there is revolution taking place in the streets of this country, and certainly right here in New York. 800-735-0230. It will take you about 3 minutes. Also on the phone with us is Davey D, who is a host out at our station in Berkeley, KPFA. Davey is going to give us a report for what's going on at the Oakland occupation. Welcome to Occupy Wall Street Radio, Davey D.
Hey, how you doing? You know, first I've been over at the Cal campus, and that's where a lot of things have been jumping off today. But I was listening to what you all were talking about in terms of the way that the movement has been demonized. And one of the things that I found to be interesting is that our mayor, who ordered the eviction of folks in Oakland, you know, had admitted that she had been on the phone and had been in consultation with police chiefs and mayors from 18 other cities. And just comparing her speech to Michael Bloomberg's speech, it sounded pretty much like the same speech, except, you know, maybe the names were changed and it might have been a different set of adjectives used. But it was pretty clear that there was a template that they were following all the way down to the excuses used. I found it very interesting that the same excuses used in New York were the same excuses used here. You know, safe, health and, health concerns, you know, the business is dwindling. I know in Oakland they said that. But, you know, the journalists here, when I went around and talked to the businesses, they said that they're doing pretty well. So you're wondering, like, where did this come from? So, you know, some people do investigation and go, oh, wait a second, it came from the Chamber of Commerce.
And I thought it was really interesting that Bloomberg said that he wanted to stop this before somebody got killed, while there are, you know, some pretty atrocious actions being committed by police all the time in neighborhoods
such as...
People
are getting killed.
Yes, in neighborhoods such as East New York and the Bronx. And he wanted to prevent somebody from getting hurt in Zuccotti Park. I mean...
Well, that I mean, these are the things that they use their corporate media arms to propagate to the rest of to our respective cities in the nation. And so people hear this and they think, well, maybe there's something wrong. But, you know, going back to what I was saying is that, you know, just listening to our mayor, I went to the press conference and I noticed that she kept the focus on these certain issues. And I asked the mayor because she kept saying that they were part of the 99%. So I figured, as the mayor, what's your conversation with the financial institutions that have actually caused this to happen in the first place? What's your conversation with Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and any other institution that has record number foreclosures in the city of Oakland? And she didn't have an answer for that. She was like, well, you know, we built homeless shelters. But as the mayor, she should have said, well, we're trying to get out of our contracts to have money deposited there, or we're not going to do business here, but we're going to take it to a credit union. So those types of things now just underscore the point that I think everybody's starting to realize, that there is a cabal of people that are in the higher echelons and now the lower echelons of government that are definitely afraid of what's going on with these Occupy movements and are trying at every turn to stifle it, demonize it, and marginalize it, and that's what's going on. But the good news for us today is that I just saw maybe close to 10, 15,000 people walking in the streets of Cal, where I went to school, on their way up to the 5 o'clock General Assembly. And that 10 to 15,000 doesn't include Occupy Oakland or San Francisco, who are going to be coming in mass later on this evening. So I think everybody's been responding to these raids that have been taking place in concert. They're responding to the type of pushback that all of us have been getting, and I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. And my last point that I'll say is that the thing in Oakland that is very interesting is that there were many of the people that were in the encampments were homeless folks. These were the same homeless people that were hidden behind City Hall when it was remodeled that nobody wanted to talk about. But they were a part of the encampment, and so now that they got rid of the tents and everything, the homeless people are still there, except now they're sleeping in the doorways of some of the very same businesses that the Chamber of Commerce said was going to be suffering losses because of the Occupy movement. But I'm sitting there looking at folks who no longer have a porta potty, no longer have food. It's cold and is sleeping two or three in the doorway. And that to me is the big tragedy and the irony of this whole thing.
And that is indeed why people are occupying Wall Street. David E., thank you so much for being with us this evening on Occupy Wall Street Radio. Folks, we are trying to raise money for the Pacifica Radio Archives. We're going to have to spend a little bit of time doing that. We need to raise about another $2,000 before this is over. That's very easy. If we get 20 of you to call and pledge at the $100 level, no, we're not offering you a premium. We're offering you some incredible programming. We're taking a break from what we would normally be doing to address what's going on in this country, what's going on politically, the fact that the young people of this country have stood up and said, we are not going to take this anymore, that you're going to recognize that the disparity that you have created between the haves and have not is embarrassing, that it's ludicrous, and it must change. Give us a call at 800-735-0230. Your money is going to support the Pacifica Radio Archives, the folks who archive all of the programming for the Pacifica Network, who have done so for years and years and years. We have incredibly beautiful recordings. We have recordings, of course, of James Baldwin, of Malcolm X, of Fannie Lou Hamer, of Angela Davis, as we were hearing this morning, of Dr. King, person after person, activist after activist. Bella Abzug, I can remember, is in there. And even in the arts section, there are multiple offerings available, but we're not offering any of them to you. If you heard something offered earlier, you can certainly pledge for that. We want you to pledge for this program and for the programming on the Pacifica Network in general. Again, the number you're going to call is 800-735-0230. We have just about 2 minutes left. I need those phones to ring. 800-735-0230. We accept your American Express, your MasterCard, or your Visa card. You call in. It takes about 3 minutes. The volunteer will take your information. You're supporting the Pacifica Network. You're supporting the Pacifica Radio Archives, and you're supporting Wheel Free Speech Radio. Thank you so much for being with us this evening on Occupy Wall Street Radio. My name is Tony Bates.
My name is Faith Logier.
I'm Prudence Cates.
I'm Zuni Tika.
And I'm Sade Adona.
Thank you so much for being with us. Once again, 800-735-0230.
What if I told you you could occupy the couch and still make a difference? Hi, I'm Kimberly Massengill from Tuesday Mornings here on BAI, and I'm the New York coordinator for Occupy Wall Street, a campaign encouraging knitters, designers, and crafters to make hats, scarves, gloves, mittens, blankets, and such to help the Occupy Wall Street protesters better endure the cold weather. BAI studios are serving as the collection point for both mailed packages and by-hand deliveries. To arrange a drop-off, call 212-209-2800. Otherwise, mail your handiwork to WBAI 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. Attention, wool. Come on. Let's put some lids on some noggins. For more information, go to thumpandgrowl.com.
Hey, I never received my premium for my last pledge to WBAI Pacifica Radio.
You didn't? Well, it takes 6 to 8 weeks after your pledge for delivery. And there is now a premium customer care hotline you can call at 212-209-2845. That's 212-209-2845. Or if you want to follow up online, there's a form on the website, WBAI.org. Just click on About WBAI and look for premium customer care on the pull-down menu.
Hey, thanks.